This hour is supported by Robbins Kaplan, LLP, dedicated to redefining excellence for high-stakes litigation representation in Indian country.
Live from Macho Blue Earth, Robbins Kaplan Studios, Native Roots Radio.
We went to all the powwows when we were young. At that time, children could not dance. Only people over 50 years of age could dance. Most people do not know this, that the government forbid children to dance Indian. And that was so they could wipe out the culture of the young people, and then finally the new generation would never know what
happened. I'm a member of the American Indian Movement, and I'm from the indigenous nations of the Western Hemisphere.
We American Indians, we can be anything we want to be, except American Indians.
You were here long before any of us were here.
Buju, everybody. My name is Peggy Flanagan. Guabagani Gadikag Ndujaba. I'm from the White Earth Nation, and my family's the Wolf Clan.
There was trouble in Custer, South Dakota yesterday.
That the American Indian Movement is a very proud, continuing part of American Indian society. I thank you.
But what I tell you is that we are not backing down. We are here, we will stand here, because we have been here for 10,000 years. We're the home team, and we're not going anywhere. The great Shankar.
Hey, Kutagi, to all my friends and relatives in four directions, you're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. Ahu, Ho-Chunk Raja, Wakunjahade, Hingadena. Hey, so let's start out the show like we normally do with Ogla about the news, but I happen to have her on here, and I really want to grill her about what's going on and then maybe talk about other few things. But we're excited. We're kind of transitioning into new things here, and we're checking this out. Oglema, Pinigigi, for all the work you do for Native Roots Radio and all over Turtle Island. Thank you so much for being on, and what's happening?
Hi, Nicholas Robert. How are you doing today?
Pretty good, pretty good. Thanks.
All right. So what's happening? I guess we could probably start with line three. Mm-hmm. That's a big thing that's been happening in Minnesota, actually for about the last 7 years. So for those of you who maybe don't know yet, what's happening in northern Minnesota right now is that Enbridge Energy, which is a Canadian tar sands oil company, is building this pipeline across Minnesota. So it goes from the northwestern corner of Minnesota down all the way across to the eastern side of Minnesota. So this oil pipeline previously existed in a corridor called Line 3. This pipeline is being heralded as a replacement project for a previous pipeline that existed. But what in fact is happening is it's taking and being cut in on this new route. This pipeline has been about 7 years in the making, and activists have been talking about it and trying to rally people to make their voice heard about how dangerous this pipeline could be to Minnesota water. And not just Minnesota water. This pipeline is going to cross underneath the Mississippi River twice across Minnesota, which means that it's now endangering everybody south of Minnesota all the way through to the Gulf of Mexico. Wow. So what's happening just north of Palisade, Minnesota, is there is a Welcome Water Protectors encampment that is being put on by Honor the Earth and Winona LaDuke, but many other activist groups like GNU Collective, Interfaith Power and Light, several other activist groups are all involved at this pipeline camp. And Enbridge has begun construction, basically with the grace of Governor Tim Walz. In late November, early December, he gave permission for Enbridge to start construction on this pipeline, despite the fact that the Red Lake Nation and the White Earth Nation still have legal battles ongoing against what's happening with Enbridge. They're stating that these lands that are being affected by the pipeline are going to affect their tribal sovereignty because it's going to affect the water where they harvest wild rice and fish. So even though these are still ongoing, these legal battles that they have, Enbridge has started construction. These legal battles aren't expected to resolve until the appeals come through sometime in summer of 2021. So basically what's happening is Enbridge is rushing to get this pipeline completed before that appeal comes through, because if that appeal is granted and they have to stop construction, it would already be done. So the pipeline encampments and the people that are there have been doing their best to stop the pipeline from continuing to be constructed. So there were two water protectors that were suspended in the trees in direct path of the pipeline. And just 3 days ago, they took down one of those tree sitters. My understanding is that the police had made notice that they were coming to take this water protector out of the tree. And they supplied an ambulance because this water protector was suspended some 50 feet up in this tree. And the ambulance was there probably in case they had to forcibly remove him from the tree. GNU Collective, which is one of the organizations that's very active in this fight, did post a video of the trees that are coming down peacefully. But that's most likely, you know, at the risk of his own safety. He needed to come down peacefully with the, it looked like some sort of cherry picker they had up there. But the action that they had as he was being removed was there was almost 100 people that had walked down to the drill pad and were singing and chanting and working really hard to let that water protector in the tree know how much his bravery was appreciated. And during that display or protest or, you know, whatever you want to call it, that act of protection that these water protectors did, there was some, from my count, somewhere between 12 and 17 water protectors that were actually arrested and were being held in Aiken County Jail. So I don't have any new news on how many of those water protectors have been released or what their charges are. But I do know that you can visit stopline3.org. And there is links on that website to be able to donate to the bail fund for those water protectors. So if you're looking for something you can do from a distance to help with this, that is a really good place to start. The camp there is also looking for donations of warm clothing for the people that are out there. They are outside all the time, making sure that this pipeline and the people constructing it know that this is not okay for Minnesota. So this is definitely something that's near to my heart. I was involved with pipeline efforts against Enbridge actually 7 years ago when I was pregnant with my daughter in more northern Minnesota in a corridor on Red Lake Ceded Land, which is where I'm from, and have been involved with this ever since. So it's definitely something that I would like to see more people getting themselves educated about and taking a stand or doing what they can to help. This really needs to turn into, you know, the Minnesota version of Standing Rock if something is going to happen.
Yes. Wow, that's amazing. And then can you, what people are listening, can you give them a little shout out of how they can support the groups up there and what sites to go to again?
Sure. Yep. So one of the main sites you can go to is going to be StopLine3, which is the number 3.org. And that would bring you to a website that's run by Honor the Earth. There's also the GNU Collective. GNU is spelled G-I-N-I-W. And that group is primarily on Facebook for updates, but they do also have a Twitter, I believe, where you can see updates and get involved there. There is an email address on the GNU Collective Facebook page. So if you are one of those people that is looking to take direct action, they offer training and support for you to do that. And they are looking for more people to be able to do that. Other notable groups that are involved right now include MN350. You can go to MN350.org and find information on their site about their Stopline 3 efforts. Gitchigumi Scouts, which is another website that's available on Facebook, that is run by a water protector who's deeply involved with the missing and murdered Indigenous relatives.
Yes.
And they're linked to that. And then there's also Minnesota Interfaith Power and Light. I believe if you just run a search for them online, their website will pull up, and they are another really valuable resource for how to get involved with this. All of these different organizations have different ways that you can help, and their websites are really the best place to start looking for that.
Well, thank you for each week enlightening everybody on what's going on all over Turtle Island. We have our own Standing Rock happening up in the deep north here, and I think it's really important to amplify people's message about there, especially with the media, not the mainstream media, and I put up quotes that are not covering this. Oglema, do you have a capacity for another quick segment here? I got a break for a commercial.
Yeah, absolutely. I could do that.
All right. Excellent. Hey, I'm with Oglema in the news, and this is Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and we'll be right back after this short break.
If you're hurting in your relationship or have been affected by sexual violence, Strong Hearts Native Helpline is a free, confidential, and anonymous domestic, dating, and sexual violence helpline available at 1-844-762-8483 or by using the Chat Now icon at strongheartshelpline.org. Advocates offer daily support and referrals for resources, 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. Central Time.
This message is sponsored by the National Indigenous Women's Resource Center. Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunjahade, and that's Distant Thunder. That's my name and my taxpayer's name, and is Robert Pilot. So welcome again, and I want to give a big welcome to Oglema, and we've been working together for like a year, 9 months, 10 months, somewhere around there, and you've been just a great asset to Native Roots Radio, and I just want to scream on the top of mountaintops that you're working with Native Roots Radio full-time now, and it's really exciting, and we have a lot of exciting things that we do, and now you can really amplify Native voices all across Turtle Island, and I think you do that with your news, but you also do that in many, many other ways, Oglema. So congratulations.
Yeah, miigwech, Robert. This is one of the biggest opportunities I think I've ever received in my entire life. I am incredibly proud and honored to be working with Native Roots Radio full-time. This has been a passion of mine, like you're saying, over the last year and 9 months, year and 10 months. We're not very good at keeping track of how long I've been involved, but to be able to do this full time is really a dream come true. And it's really going to, like you were saying, uplift Native voices and give support to those voices in not only in Minnesota, but all across Turtle Island. So I am absolutely proud to be able to do such great work.
Right. And there's other things that you do. And I know, like, it's huge to pull together the news each week. And there's so much going on. There's so many resources that you have to check and double check. So I know there's a lot involved in that. It isn't just reading or talking off the top of your head like we're doing now. But so, you know, what else do you do with Native Roots Radio? And maybe you can talk a little bit about what's happening this week.
Sure. So with Native Roots Radio, I also do a lot of work in the background on some of our other projects that we have. So Native Roots Radio, as you might know, we do a Sunday symposium each week. And sometimes for our Sunday symposiums, we partner with other Native groups or advocate a certain cause. So for this week, I'm helping to produce a collaborative project between St. Paul Indians in Action, Ramsey County, and Native Roots Radio. And what we're doing is talking about the effects of COVID-19 on those who live in Ramsey County, specifically the Native American community. So we're going to have a lot of different voices on the symposium this weekend, kind of touching on, you know, four major questions. You know, what can you do to help your community in COVID-19? What are the health professionals and community professionals in Ramsey County doing? And, you know, experiences from the Native community members who are there. So we're going to have a lot of different voices. We're going to have community support professionals, mental health professionals. We'll have Dr. Anthony Stately on. He's actually going to serve a dual role as both, a doctorate role and also somebody who recently had the COVID-19 virus. Mm. We're also going to have youth and elders involved and talking about, you know, how they're coping This has been, I think, one of the hardest years for people all over the country, all over the world, due to COVID-19. But we all know that COVID-19 is especially hard on Native communities, mm-hmm. and it can be especially hard on urban Native communities as well, just because there is so much information and resources that maybe were previously available are no longer available. So mm-hmm. people need to hear about what they can do and what other options are available and what's being done to make sure that that faith and the reliability on their community is still there. So since this partners with Ramsey County, this one will be specifically, you know, addressing Ramsey County. But mm-hmm. as you know, this is affecting all Native nations in all parts of the world, all Indigenous people. Wow. So it's definitely something that we'll continue to cover in the news piece as well as updates on what's happening. There is a little bit of a light at the end of the tunnel with COVID-19. Vaccinations recently became available for essential workers and those who are at high risk. So both Red Lake Nation, Leech Lake, and Mille Lacs have started giving vaccinations to their essential staff. So that's really exciting news too. Oh,
yeah.
That they're able to get access to that right away.
Yeah, and there you go. Ogama, that was just awesome. That was awesome 3 minutes of what's happening here. And, you know, we're lucky here on Native Roots Radio to have your young warrior person to be on, and really the passion comes through. There's a couple things I wanted to talk about just before we let you go and get back to work. Is one of the things I'd like to just mention, there's, you know, Deb Holland, it's just huge all over Turtle Island, that she is working in the Biden administration. So do you have any like update or any kind of news, or are you just excited about it like I am?
I am absolutely thrilled to see Deb Holland be nominated for the Secretary of the Interior. As far as I'm aware, a Native person has never been nominated to a cabinet, less likely confirmed. So she's confirmed, she's going to be a first. And I think she's a wonderful pick because she has been known and outspoken about her support of environmental protection. So for her to be working in the Secretary of the Interior, she's going to have this very intense and, you know, weighted voice to be able mm-hmm. to take to that high level of office on behalf of Native people all over the country. So she had actually tweeted after her nomination was made public on, I believe, Thursday. She had tweeted that she had grown up in a Laguna Pueblo house with her mother, and that made her fierce, and that she's going to be fierce for all of us. And I'll be honest with you, I choked up a little bit when I read it. So I am just absolutely enamored with the idea of, you know, having Deb in that high of an office. As those who listen to the show might know, I have a 7-year-old daughter, and she has seen so many wonderful firsts this year. Kamala Harris being elected as vice president, she was thrilled to see a woman and a woman of color in that high of a position. And when I told her about Deb and showed her, you know, Deb's picture, because we don't have cables, so obviously I just showed her a picture. She did the same thing that I'm sure Native girls all over the country are going to say. She looks like me.
Oh.
She looks like us. And she was like, well, what is she going to do? And I had to give, you know, the best I could for my 7-year-old an explanation of what she's going to do and how she's going to help us. And she just sat there in the chair and just wiggled with glee to see this kind of thing happening in her lifetime. I don't know that she was really expecting that. So it's something definitely really beautiful to see.
Wow, that's awesome. And in the last 30 seconds, minute here, we have also a quick shout out to, we talked earlier about Minnewaukan Sioux and what they're doing and what their plans are.
Yeah, so the Minnewaukan Sioux last year, they launched this campaign. It was called Understand Native Minnesota. And they actually got an update with an interview on WCCO on the 17th. So the leading campaign person is Rebecca Crook-Stratton, and she talks a lot about what their plans are to help provide a greater understanding of the Native American history and culture and tribal government in the Minnesota education system. So the big takeaways from that are that most of the Indian education in the United States ends around the early 1900s at Andrew Jackson and the Trail of Tears. So that contributes to this idea that maybe we no longer exist.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other big takeaway from this interview was that she explained that so many Native leaders, you know, they have to work with so many different levels of government. They have to work with their local levels of government in their surrounding communities, the state government and the federal government,
mm-hmm.
but they're also sovereign nations. So they have their own tribal governments. Well, those tribal governments spend a lot of time educating those elected officials in the state and federal offices simply because sovereignty and tribal government education is not taught in a K-12
right.
system. And unless you seek it out in post-secondary, you're not going to get that information. So
right.
I think it's going to be really powerful to see those that campaign play out and to see more resources for educators and students and to work directly with the Department of Education to make some changes to that.
Wow, perfect. You know, thank you again, Pini Gigi, for all you do, Oglema. This has been really a game-changing for Native Roots Radio to have you aboard full-time like this, and just a great report you just gave these two segments. Pini Gigi, for being on, and we'll see you Sunday night. And also, I just want to give a quick shout-out that you also produce a show called Together with Heather for House Representative Heather Keeler, and that's really exciting that the good work that you're doing for our community. So thank you again for being on.
Yes, Nicholas Robert, thank you for having me on, and Jacob Alderman.
Ho. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and we'll be right back after this short break. Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakanja Hare. You know, each week we are so excited and thrilled and just totally pumped to have Nancy Bolio of MN350 Bemidji, and also Rise Coalition, and also host of Rock the Vote Native Style, and all these other things you do. Welcome, Nancy.
Well, Chimi Gwich, for having me on the show today. It's always a pleasure to be on the radio and update our relatives and our allies. And so, you know, Robert, it's been a busy week out in Palisade, and, a quick little prayer, you know, for the pipeliner that lost his life yesterday.
Yes.
I understand he's a young gentleman, and so prayers to the family. You know, we don't like the pipeline, and doesn't mean, you know, we can't, you know, have respect for the people that work that pipeline. So I had an opportunity yesterday to run into a pipeliner at the gas station here in Bemidji.
Mm.
And of course he didn't have his mask on in the store. So, you know, I had to give him, you know, a little 2 cents of respectful speaking. If you're in our town, in our state, please do that. But, you know, he's the one that told me that the young guy was just 23 years old and sounded like it was a cherry picker accident. So prayers to the family. And yeah, we still need to shut that pipeline down though. So Monday, we were up there in, support of Inu Collective, and they were actually supporting the tree sitters that had been up in the trees for about 11 days.
Mm-hmm.
And the county was going to remove them from the trees because they had created a obstruction for the work to continue on. So we had some brave water protectors that held the front line that day.
Yeah.
And we had about 20 arrests. And so they removed the tree sitters. And the people on the front line were arrested. And then we also had about three people that, you know, were trying to stop the cherry picker, and they were arrested as well. And they're actually being charged with assaulting the police, but they weren't charging the police, Robert. They were running after the cherry picker. And I just want the world to know that we're not aggressive like that. So,
right.
The stories aren't always told in a good way. And then, we also just were out there on Wednesday, or Thursday, excuse me, I'm losing track of time, with our church allies, and they had a powerful prayer. They made space for our water walkers, and so we were, you know, in a beautiful way. And the other good news that broke on Thursday while we were at the river praying was the appointment of Deb Holland.
Yes.
And Robert, it was so strong in the moment, and we made history, and you know, we just found another place at the table because we have courageous Okichi Dakwe, like Deb Holland, saying, we can do this. And so she's an inspiration to not just myself, but it was good news for Indian country throughout, you know, the United States. And so I look forward to what that brings, because I think that will find us some environmental and racial justice here in Indian country. So, you know, I'm very happy for that.
Right. And she has a lot to do with public land. And I know a lot of digging is happening in public land up there on Line 3 in the deep north.
Right. So basically, you know, I think with her position, we can better safeguard, you know, our land and our water and our air. And, you know, I just, you know, hold a lot of respect for Deb. I had the opportunity to have dinner with her one day, and you could tell she works from her heart. And, you know, we need more strong hearts out there and people that represent who we are, not consult for us and sell us out, you know, like we've seen with past administrations. But it's so, it's, that's what makes it so nice, Robert. We have our own people there now,
mm-hmm.
our own, you know, not somebody in a suit with pale color skin trying to talk and speak for us and,
exactly.
and never represents us, you know? So, you know, I'll be honest, I cried. That's how much joy it brought to me. And,
mm-hmm.
and you know, I know we still have to work hard, and we're going to continue to work hard, and we're going to keep, you know, supporting our relatives that want to run for office. And we're going to get smarter at playing this game, because you know what, Robert, we're just only going to play it better. And I see that happening. And so, you know, that was so, so good to hear. And
mm-hmm.
it warms my heart that we have Deb Hall in there. And then, you know, today, the Indigenous Environmental Network is out to Palisade, and they're praying for our missing, murdered Indigenous relatives. And so, you know, unfortunately, I can't be there today. And but my love and my prayers are there in spirit. And so I want those, you know, prayers to be just heard in a good way. And I think, you know, we all have our part to play. And so if you can't be there, you know, today, or you couldn't be there last week, start thinking ahead and preparing yourself. Because what we do know, Robert,
mm-hmm.
This pipeline is miles and miles and miles long. And we know that we need warriors, you know, along the pipeline route to, you know, hold space treaty style. So on Saturday, the 26th, we're going to start organizing, you know, some work here on the other side. What do we need to do to hold space? So we got White Earth and Red Lake that will be meeting in White Earth this weekend. And we're going to discuss what camp life looks like and what it takes to hold that kind of space and how to support our relatives during COVID. Because what we're finding out is, you know, we thought, you know, initially we could utilize some of the hotels along the pipeline route to keep our relatives safe and warm during winter and COVID. But the pipeline has taken all those spaces. So one of the challenges we have is sheltering our relatives that want to come up north. And we have people already willing to come. But because we face those challenges, we have to be creative in the way that we plan and how we're going to hold those spaces in a safe way, Robert.
Wow, so, that's good thinking.
Yeah. So we got lots of work to do. And, you know, there's call-outs for our warriors and our water protectors. You can help behind the scenes or on the front line. There's so many different ways to help. So I encourage our listeners to follow Ginyu Collective, Honor the Earth, StopLine3.org, Rise Coalition, MN350, and Indigenous Environmental Network. These are the organizations that have their boots on the ground, and we're just going to build on that movement and protect the water.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I just want to throw out there, Pinigi, for all you do, and I know it's a lot of work, and it's physical work up there, and the weather is not the best, and you know, and prayers out to that young person that passed away, you know, that died working for Line 3.
Right. So, you know, just a little prayer for all those people affected by those pipelines in so many different ways, and
mm-hmm.
that we don't, you know, take notice too. So, you know, like our missing and murdered Indigenous relatives, that's real, you know,
mm-hmm.
and we see all these hotels being filled with these out-of-state men, and it's just like, we can't let our guards down. We have to be more attentive to our surroundings at this point. And the COVID, too, is another risk factor. So, you know, stay safe, my relatives, when you come up here and help us out. Make sure you got your mask. And if you need any help, you know, finding your way here, we're also helping people with gas cards and the little things, too, Robert. So We know people are in financial barriers during COVID, and we just want to make sure when people come, they have enough gas to get home and that they're warm when they're standing outside with us. So we will have extra mittens and those kind of things. So if people just need support coming up, just inbox us on one of those, pages I mentioned earlier, and we'll find a way to help you all.
Yes, Pini for all this update and information. Just one last thing, and I'll leave you, is that when I was up there, I've seen license plates from all over the country. This is not a jobs. This is not what they've been promoting it as, a jobs thing. So I just wanted to jump in and say that, Nancy, before I let you go.
Right, right. So again, you know, like Robert says, these are all out-of-state people coming here to work on a dying pipeline. And, you know, first and foremost, is keep all of our relatives safe. So be attentive of your surroundings and show up in the movement, because it's a beautiful place to be.
Oh, Pini Gigi. Hey, you're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and that was Nancy Bolio of Bemidji 350 and Rise Coalition and host of Rock the Treaties Native Style. We'll be right back after this short break. Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and we're awoke here in the Twin Cities. And one of the awesome people that we get on the show, we have this person here, Robert Lilligren, who's head of Native American Community Development Institute, and gives us a super updates on what's going on, not only in Turtle Island, but specifically in the Twin Cities. And we're always excited to touch base with Robert. Robert, welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake.
Yeah, bonjour, Robert. Bonjour, everyone. Thanks for having me here. I really relish these opportunities to relate.
Yeah, we had a big week here, and I just want to maybe pop some bullet points towards you and get your response, and also let you free throw what's going on in the Twin Cities. But so excited about Deb Haaland.
That is huge. That is historic. She's the nominee for the Secretary of the Interior under the Biden-Harris administration, first Native cabinet member, but specifically the department that she's going to be leading, and how important that is to our Native relatives.
Yeah, well, it is. And, you know, just about land and ecology and things that are dear to Native Americans and a lot of Americans, too. So that's a major score.
It's huge. I mean, it's, what, 500 million acres of public land. I mean, that's parks, that's resources, oil, gas, drilling, endangered species habitat. I mean, these are the things that are huge values to Indigenous people. And, you know, you'd almost think the first cabinet secretary, the first Native cabinet secretary, would have some minor posts. This is the big kahuna. Yeah. And we need to support her in that position. I mean, she's coming into centuries of oppression of Native people, of desecration of Native lands. And it's going to be a big ship to turn around, to even turn. So we need to be supporting her in that position, but it is huge.
That is huge. And before I get to our next point, I just want to give a shout out to Margarita. Can you just briefly talk about what's happening over there?
Oh, to get to the super local, Margarita Ortega, Rita Ortega, is running for city council here in Minneapolis in the 9th Ward. That's where Little Earth is, here, Little Earth of United Tribes. She's been politically involved for a while. She ran a good campaign for the State House a few years back, and she's very engaged in the community. She's announced her candidacy. Her organization looks great. She has some of the leading young emerging DFL activists with emphasis on land, on the environment, on really serving the people. And so she had an event last night online to officially launch, and she sent a letter out last week, and she is up and running. And so yeah. It's Rita Ortega in Ward 9 in Minneapolis.
Oh, that's exciting. We always want to support our relatives. You know, there's a couple things going on, and I'd like you to maybe talk about the city budget in Minneapolis. I know there's a lot of interesting things going on in the news that we've seen, and you know, there's policing and there's budgets, but there's much more in that. Can you give our people just a little update on that?
Sure, sure. So the city of Minneapolis, the city council has approved the budget. The mayor signed it. So the work part is done. But ever since George Floyd was murdered this year, policing, what policing looks like, community safety is sort of the umbrella term that that the city of Minneapolis is using. You know, there's sort of the defund the police movement on one end. There's the reform movement. There's pretty much agreement with everyone that something needs to change. And data has shown, you know, we have deeply rooted racism in our institutions in the city, especially in policing. And so what do we do? So the police budget became the big focus of debate, mm-hmm. this budget cycle, and it got hot. And so there's a compromise. I mean, that's governing, right? A compromise. And so there's a compromise position that was passed. But what I really think is important for our relatives to know and to lift up is the role that the local Native community played in creating the environment where compromise was possible. And we had a really robust debate, as we would say during my time in City Hall, in the community over this, especially when some non-Native groups were promoting a certain approach. It was called the People's Budget. It meant defund the police by $53 million. Mm. And they came to the community, and the community realized that they were representing themselves as if they already had our support. Mm. And they hadn't really worked on it. They hadn't really asked for our support. And so that prompted at least the community around the Metropolitan Urban Indian Directors, or MUD, to really step in and state some of our positions and to state clearly who does and who does not speak for us.
Whoa.
And it was really triggering. I got to tell you, I was surprised to see the strength of the response in the community. Mm. I mean, you heard young leadership saying things like, they're stealing our voice, you know, and just doing all these kind of typical sort of colonizer things, mm-hmm. you know. So that, and then the outcome was we sent this letter off, you know, the budget debate continued, the budget got approved. And then right away, I kept hearing from people in decision-making positions, influential positions, how much they valued hearing from the Metropolitan Urban Indian Directors, hearing that community perspective, how helpful that was in crafting compromise. I even heard that from Minneapolis City Council members.
Wow.
So my point being, we have influence. And it was interesting, Robert, when we were crafting our statement and our positions amongst the Metropolitan Urban Indian Directors leadership, we said, if they can't find a way to come to agreement, let's show them an indigenous way. Let's show them how. I mean, it was really our objective. Wow. And we achieved it. So our community needs to embrace that, mm-hmm. that we do have voice and we do have influence here.
And capacity, I think that's what's exciting when you talk about young leaders and people speaking their truth and really really feeling that they're able to, and maybe not so much like our generation when we were young and the generation before that. So that's we talk about that a lot, that the next generation's really coming up big.
They are, and that's a really good observation too, Robert. Thanks. That capacity piece. We have a way of coming together and expressing our voice.
Wow. So there's other things like the truth part, the truth and revitalization, is that what?
Reconciliation, truth and reconciliation.
I can't read my writing.
TNR, it's a whole global movement, and mm-hmm. we've seen a lot, you know, in Canada and in other areas, Cambodia, where these truth and reconciliation, public government sort of sponsored, government embraced processes have tried to address, you know, the issues of colonization, the issues of destroying, desecrating lands and things. And so the city of Minneapolis passed a truth and reconciliation resolution that created a work group. I'm part of that work group that's to advise on the creation of a permanent Truth and Reconciliation Commission in the city of Minneapolis.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've been meeting for a few weeks. It's really rapid schedule work. We're to have recommendations by the end of January for the city to consider and act on. And at this table, it's mostly Native people and African American people, you know, stolen land and stolen labor.
Mm.
And the Native voice, the whole group, just really behaves in a way that acknowledges that the first people should speak first. And I really, really appreciate that. And this mm-hmm. is a really high level group. I've been part of a lot of sort of think tank kinds of conversations. This is probably the thinkiest think tank I've ever been part of. But the Native voices are really coming forward. And we have these younger women, Christine McLeod, of the National Native American Boarding School Healing Coalition, Melissa Olson, mm-hmm. just a top-rate historian, storyteller mm-hmm. here, that are leading voices on this group. And I've just been so impressed with their knowledge, with what they have to say, with how beautifully they express it. There are other Native folks on this work group, but those two I would really lift up both as they're leading, man. Mm-hmm. They're leading the conversation, and it's just exactly where I think they should be.
Awesome. Hey, we only got a minute left, but I want to just say two things. Let's give a shout-out to Mike Gozy, Ho-Chunk, and what he's doing in Minneapolis for our homeless people and all the stuff that he does.
Gozy is leading the way, man. He just opened a new project, Homeward Bound, that's supportive housing for people leaving unsheltered homelessness and that have opioid use. I'm looking at it. I live so close to it, I can't tell you. I can see it right now as we're talking.
Mm-hmm.
He's also opened another model, a 50-bed homeless shelter right across Hiawatha from where the Wall of Forgotten Natives was.
Mm.
He is leading the way, innovating, and not just for Native people. He is showing the whole system better ways to respond. And so, so I'm glad you're lifting up his work. He deserves it.
Yeah, Peeny Gigi.
And his team.
Yes.
And his team, I got to say, his outreach folks, I mean, it's an incredible group.
They are. They totally are. They really are. And this one last thing I just got to say, you heard I was interviewed and I gave you a shout out. So you were surprised.
I'm up on the North Shore. We're listening to local radio out of Grand Marais and I'm having coffee. It was really warm last week up there. I'm having coffee out on the deck, and all of a sudden my sister-in-law comes up, says, "Hey, they're talking about you on the radio up here." I'm like, "Oh yeah, you know, it's Robert Pilot. He's saying really good things about you." So me gwitch for that.
we're everywhere. So really thank you for thank you so much, Peeny Gigi, for this update and all you do, and prayers to you and your family. Really thank you so much
for being on. Thank you.
Hey, you're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and that was Robert Lilligren, Native American Community Development Institute, and we'll be right back.
We are a Lucid Nation.
It's a good day to be indigenous.
Get up, stand up.
They are going to become more brutal.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome back to Hour 2 of Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. This show is dedicated to those who give back and fight back for our people. We are the resistance. We are awake. All things are our relatives. All things are our relatives. What we do to everything we do to ourselves. All is one black elk. Hey, I want to introduce my awesome and beautiful wife, Wendy Pilot. Wendy has been on every show. And when she hasn't been on the show, she's called in and she talks about her sacred animals each week. And we really appreciate that. And she's a volunteer Minnesota State Council member of the Humane Society of the United States. And she works on animal issues at the state level. Tell us your name and welcome, Wendy.
Hello. Welcome. Thank you for having me as always. And I think I maybe missed one show out of like the whole time we've ever been on the air.
Yeah, and you're changing your title, too, I just thought when I read that.
Yeah, it's not official yet, so I don't want to announce that yet.
Sorry,
so,
next show.
Yeah, next show. Before I even get started, I want to wish everyone a happy holidays and Merry Christmas next week. A couple of months, because I belong to and I am a member of the Humane Society of the United States, I get a newsletter, and I just received it today, winter of 2021. And it's a beautiful newsletter, and if you become a donating member, you can get this newsletter every, I think it's quarterly.
Donating,
right?
To who?
The Humane Society of the United States.
Cool.
Well, they do awesome work, and it's just not the things that I've talked about before, but many, many other things. But anyway, what I want to talk to you about today, Robert, is the coronavirus, right? And what's going on now with the pandemic and, you know, people and families getting evicted, right? Because of they can't pay their rents because they've been furloughed or they've lost their jobs. And what happens to the pets that they have?
Oh, gosh.
Right? And I honestly, I didn't really give it much thought until right. I picked up this news article today and read it. And I was shocked to find out that 70% of renters own pets.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't think it was that high.
It's changed over the years. You know, just like when we go to hotels now, they take pets now.
Yeah.
Pets are part of the family.
Mm-hmm. And up to 40 million people in 17 million households are at risk of eviction.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully this vaccine is going to be quick. Let's all get it. Let's get this over with and let's all get back to work and things will get back to normal. But I wanted to read this article that's in this newsletter, and it's written by Karen E. Lang. And it's keeping families together as evictions rise. Pets for Life helps people stay with their animals. So there's an organization out there called Pets for Life.
Mm.
And what they do is they help people who are getting evicted. Right. They help people find fosters for their dogs and cats while people are able to find new housing. What they also do is help people pay, you know, when you rent a house and you have a cat, well, you have to pay extra every month for the pet or, you know, security deposit. They help with all kinds of stuff like that. They help with vaccines. They help with health, veterinary care. They help with paying for dog and cat food, which is really good. So here, things were looking good for Earlene in Atlanta at the start of 2020. She had a job at Macy's. She was renting a house with enough space for her teenage son and daughter and their three dogs while she was saving to buy a house of their own. Then in March, COVID-19 struck. Earlene lost her job. Her landlord, my New York accent, her landlord told
like
her
she
had to either buy the rental house or move out in 60 days because he couldn't afford the property taxes anymore. Soon she was putting stuff in storage and wondering what to do about her dogs, a Yorkie named Sage, a Pitbull mix named Pearly, and a boxer named Falcon. It's tough to find housing for dogs, especially big ones. She considered sleeping in her car. Quote, hard times. That's putting it lightly, Earlene says. Quote, people are gouging you. They know you're desperate. A nonprofit called Pause Between Homes came to the rescue, arranging for Sage and Pearly to go to Foster's, and Falcon, who was a little bit more rambunctious, went to a kennel for 90 days.
Oh, Wanda.
Yeah.
Wanda.
I know, or Wanda, she'd be the rambunctious one having to go to the kennel. No, she would go to a foster. But during this time, Earlene and her children, they were able to go to stay with relatives and then a hotel. And then a housing attorney, Cole Thaler, who founded Pause Between Homes, brought Pearly and Sage for visits and helped her search for dog-friendly rentals.
Oh, good.
Right? So this is a really good organization. And these type of organizations are all over the place. right? So if you know of anybody who's facing eviction, who has pets, really, you know, don't give your pets up or bring them to the shelter or leave them behind or, you know, get rid of them. There are services out there, and they're in many, many 50 states has mm-hmm. something that can help.
Mm-hmm.
So finally, Erleen found a four-bedroom outside Atlanta, paws between homes, paid the $400 pet deposit, because she had to have a pet deposit for $400, but they paid it for her. In October, her family, including the dogs, moved in. So that's a happy ending, right? That's what we need to see during these really hard times.
Mm-hmm.
During the coming months, millions of people with pets will face circumstances similar to Erleen's as federal, state, and local pandemic eviction moratoriums expire and unemployment and rental assistance are exhausted.
Mm-hmm.
And this is another thing. The federal government needs to come in, step up and help people. Forget these big corporations and businesses, right? We need to help the little guy, the regular American people who live every day.
Yep, exactly.
It's really too much. A tsunami of eviction is expected to hit in January after the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention moratorium expires December 31st and back rent and late fees come due. Mm. That's the problem.
Yep.
The Humane Society of the United States Pets for Life program is working with local animal welfare groups to help people with their pets together as the pre-COVID affordable housing crisis swells.
Jeez.
It goes on. There was another story about a woman in Nashville. Sheila learned she would have to pay an equivalent of 1 month's rent in pet deposits to keep her four cats. Another partner group paid half of the total. Then the pet committee center negotiated a deal for Sheila, who lived on a fixed income, to pay off the rest of the balance in monthly installments.
So that's awesome.
So there's ways to work around this.
So how do we find those ways up? Do we just Google them?
Yeah. So how can people help?
Mm-hmm.
Best way, Support Pets for Life. It's called Support Pets for Life. You could donate at thehumanesociety.org. /Pets for Life.
Mm-hmm.
And this money goes directly to people who own pets who are in danger of eviction.
Wow.
The other thing is you could join a local foster network,
mm-hmm.
right? There's plenty of shelters around that need fosters, and you could foster pets. Maybe you could help somebody who's being evicted and just have a loving home for their pet while they find their way back after this COVID. And share your eviction responses toolkit. So there's a toolkit online you could find out. It's ways to, you could just go on and Google Humane Society toolkit for evictions, and it'll tell you what you need to do.
Wow, that's awesome. That's awesome. Also, thank you so much for bringing this much needed information about our sacred animals, that which are our relatives, and which are not just our pets, but our family members.
And
so that's really big. And I really miss the days that used to give me questions. But really, thanks, Wendy, as always. You know, this has been our Sacred Animal section. And you're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. And we'll be right back after this short break. Thank you, Wendy.
Thank you, Robert.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. We're so proud and happy to have House Representative, former House Representative Mary Kunish, now State Senator. Let's take a listen to what she has to say this week.
How mataki yape, it's State Representative Mary Kunish Podine, soon to be Senator Kunish, come January. It is December 18th, and we're just 1 week away from Christmas. So I hope you all are going to be able to take a little time away from all your Zooming and all of the online work that's been going on and really enjoy your families. But keeping a distance, if you can, this time around, please, please, please be careful as far as being out in public. Make sure you have a mask on and that you're washing your hands and really taking care of each other. If we can get through this, who knows, by spring we might be great. Because that vaccine is coming out, we've already started to receive the vaccine here in Minnesota. Those at the front lines, our health workers, have had the vaccination now for the past 2 days. And then it'll keep moving down the path so that those that are exposed to it the most will have the most coverage by the vaccine, and then pretty soon it'll be ready for you and for me. And I just want to encourage everyone to get the vaccine. Let's wipe this out. You get it once, and then 2 weeks later, come back and get it again. So there'll be more information coming out about that. But one of the other things that happened this week is that the governor signed into law $216 million in direct support for small businesses, and he extended 13 weeks for unemployment benefits. We know how hard it has been for everybody. Losing your job this past spring and not getting one back again, especially if you're in the service industry, such as bars and restaurants, I've got a handful of family members that are struggling because of this, but we're just going to try, as I said before, to get through this and get through this alive and get through this safe. So there is that opportunity to apply for direct support for small businesses, and we are hoping that it will help some of our community members make it through this pandemic. The other thing is that kids will be able to go back to school starting January 18th. It's really important that our schools decide based on their communities what is going to work for them the best. Do they have enough personnel that can come into school? Have they set the school up in a safe way? Are parents comfortable sending their kids to school? And kids being in school is really an important public health priority. They play a really critical role in the health and the well-being. And, of course, we want well-educated kids in Minnesota because they are our future. So the governor says, based on Minnesota's evolving understanding of the virus, young kids are believed to be less susceptible to serious complications from COVID-19. We didn't know that at the beginning. And then the state has also learned about how to reduce the potential for spread in schools from successes in other settings. So the governor this week updated the safe learning plan so that starting on January 18th, 2021, every elementary school across the state can choose to have an in-person learning model as long as they're able to implement additional mitigation strategies and provide and require staff to wear a face shield and mask when they are doing the work that they have been doing for so long. And so it's really important that we are able to get our kids back because they need to be around their friends. They need to be around their teachers. Parents, have that responsibility of getting to work, and this could help alleviate a little bit of that issue. So the other thing that I just want to point out is that as Minnesota approaches 4,500 deaths, our hospital rates and the community spread is still well above the high risk threshold. and they're significantly higher than this summer and this fall. And our hospitals, our doctors, our nurses, our healthcare employees really are concerned about capacity when it comes to COVID-19 as it's continuing to spread through our communities. And so our governor, Governor Walz, is continuing efforts to stem that community spread of COVID-19 and support our frontline heroes. Bars, restaurants, and breweries are also to remain closed for indoor dining, but they can open their doors, their outdoor service at 50% capacity or 100 people each. And we know that there are those business owners that are challenging the governor and being defiant by opening. I hate to see the results of that, to tell you the truth. I really do hate to see the results of that. If you remember a few months ago, our Republican Party decided to have an event on election night, and many of them were there and not wearing masks. And from what I understand, former Senator Ralph left there with being infected by COVID. He's been in the hospital and on a respirator, and we're just not sure that he's going to make it. So that is a prime example of why it is so important that we are still keeping that distance and being conscious of the pain of COVID and how it can really wreak havoc on our communities. The other really great thing that happened this week is that our Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women's Task Force report came out. It was submitted to the Minnesota Legislature on the 15th. And I just have to tell you how unbelievably proud I am of this report. We know that although American Indian women and girls make up just 1% of our state's population, between 2010 and 2018, 8% of all the murdered women and girls in Minnesota were American Indian. And with any given month between 2012 and 2020, anywhere from 27 to 54 American Indian women and girls in Minnesota were missing. And this is just, you know, one of the heartbreaking realities of our Indigenous community. And it is time, it absolutely is time that we do something to address this injustice. This issue has begun to be recognized more and more by our general public and our lawmakers and our policymakers. And even though our Native communities have known about this whole, I call it a pandemic because it is a global wide issue, the trauma is something that our Native communities are not, are definitely know about and have lived the historic pain, the historic trauma of it for these hundreds of years. The Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women's Task Force, I want to remind you, was created by a unanimous bipartisan support from the Minnesota State Legislature. When we held the hearings, every single state House of Representative, every senator on both sides of the aisle, Dems and Republicans supported this, and it was coordinated by the Minnesota Department of Public Safety. And we really have to thank Wilder Research for their extensive research and reviewing published articles. In the report, they did a fantastic job of summarizing the laws and the policies, and that they were able to access some of the absolutely necessary relevant data points from our state's data system. On top of that, they coordinated the interview of 32 experts. We would have liked to have more, but the virus really interrupted this. And then they held public hearing feedback sessions and open public comment sessions so that those that had something to share or comment to make or a story that had been a burden for so long, that was able to happen. And so I really do want to thank them. I want to thank Nigel Perot and Kate Weeks at the Department of Justice. And I want to thank all of the chairs and all of the committee members, because every single one of them did a fantastic job. As a result of this, the task force came up with some mandates or recommendations. And there are, you know, if you want to find the report, I would suggest you just Google MMIW Minnesota report. And there's 164 pages of information. And at the end, what we really want to do, the top item is to create a MMIW office to provide ongoing attention and leadership on this issue and make sure that the legislature provides adequate funding and resources in order to implement the recommendations. Always, our work is around addressing systemic racism, and we certainly want to focus on eliminating poverty and meeting the basic needs of all people. The last good piece of news is that our President-elect Joe Biden selected New Mexico Rep. Deb Haaland as his nominee for the Interior Secretary on Thursday. It is a historic pick that will make her the very first Native American to lead the powerful federal agency that has wielded influence over our nation's tribes for generations. And I can hardly wait to see and hear the good work that Deb is going to do on behalf of Indian country. So I, for one, am so proud to accept her as that nomination, and I hope that that we will have really good things come out of this. So my time is almost up. I wish you all well. If I don't hear you don't hear from me again before the holidays, all the best to you. Take good care of each other. Wopala Tonka.
You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and we'll be right back after this short break. Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and we have the owner of Solar Bear Energy here, Bob Blake from Red Lake, who's... you know, I want to talk to Bob about one thing before we get into some information about what's happening all around Turtle Island. But remember when we were at the in Iowa, you and I, and we were doing a live remote radio show during the presidential forum, and we were hanging largely with I got a selfie with Deb Haaland, and I know you did too. And we are so excited, and it means a lot in a lot of different ways. Robert, welcome.
Oh, wow. Thank you so much, Robert, for having me. And isn't that incredible? I mean, that is this is history. And I'm so excited for Deb and her leadership and just everything that she's going to bring to this Biden administration. This is just so exciting for our people.
Yeah, well, I think part of her job, you know, with public you know, she deals with public land is really going to be a protective person of our native lands and our ceremonial lands, but also what you deal with, and that's the solar energy through Solar Bear and also your nonprofit.
Yeah, and I think, okay, so this is how I see this kind of planning out, Robert, is what's happening in Australia, right? They're starting their first renewable energy zone. Okay. And what's interesting about that is I'm thinking, the new, you know, Department of Interior Secretary Deb Haaland, right. Is it could take some leads here from what Australia is doing and creating renewable energy zones on tribal reservations across Turtle Island. That would be exciting.
Wow, that is exciting. So, you know, one of the things that I'm always really proud to talk to you about is the hard work that you've been doing via Solar Bear. And you're working up putting together a solar farm and the planning of that. And that's changing for all of us here on Turtle Island, especially our native communities. Can you speak a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, you know, what's going to be happening? And I think this is what's been actually in the news, and what the utilities and kind of everybody's kind of getting their heads wrapped around, right, are distributed generation systems, basically, mm-hmm. and microgrids. And you kind of see the erratic weather, you know, and you see the hacking from, you know, from overseas.
Yep.
And what's happening is, our grids are so connected. They're so huge. Right.
Right.
And so we have to basically like minimize those grids now, because the power lines are actually causing fires out in California.
That's right. Right? That's right.
And so like we have to think about safety and resilience right now, and going towards this microgrid kind of like, you know, mentality now is exactly what we're trying to do actually in Red Lake. And what we would like to really see in all tribal communities is their own distributed generation system. So their own microgrid, their own utility company, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when you think about how much money is generated in the energy system, we're talking a $1 trillion industry, Robert.
Wow.
Okay. So when you think about the gaming industry, which a lot of Native tribes are involved with, that's a $1 billion industry, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you do the math, okay, and you think about it in terms of like what is more profitable, right, and what's going to actually help the community more,
mm-hmm.
I would lean towards energy and distributed generation systems, because mm-hmm. that's what's really going to create a lot more opportunities for especially tribal nations.
No, exactly. You know, and that's just poetry to my ears to hear that, because we found that the few tribes that are blessed with gaming, once COVID hit, you know, no income for our people. We have tribes across Turtle Island that don't have running water. And you know, the plight of the Native American, I think, really needs to diversify. And I'm so happy that you're leading the way and one of the big leaders of this, Robert. So I'm just really, really happy to, be talking to you as always.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, it's really exciting. You know, I got to speak to Senator Durbin's office about a week and a half ago about, something he's putting forth in the Senate around, clean energy economy bill. And there's going to be, you know, resources in there for, tribal nations. So, how the people here in Washington heard about me, I don't know.
But, they got the they have the internet there too.
Yeah, exactly.
No, so, I mean, I'm just blessed to know you. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's kind of nerve wracking to get a call from, you know, the U.S. Senator, you know. But, you know, that was exciting to basically talk about those opportunities and what I think is needed. And then also I've been able to, also give comment to a climate report that got sent to the government from the Institute for Tribal Environment Professionals out of Northern Arizona. So that's also getting published. And so, you know, it really is exciting, because, I mean, the technology has never been here for us like this, right?
Right.
It's only now that the technology has evolved and that we're able to go ahead and take advantage of this. And we're able to talk in these terms now and pursue these opportunities like never before. And when you think about it, Robert, 180,000 terawatts of energy hit the world each day from the sun. No one owns the sun, Robert.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And imagine all of us just using that and soaking that up for our energy usage and putting that to good use. So that's why I say this is just game changing, especially for tribal lands. And it's even more game changing to have a secretary like Deb Haaland in there now, who is just a supporter and staunch like advocate, right,
right,
for renewable energy. So I'm just excited for the future for renewable energy, especially renewable energy in tribal lands.
Wow, that's awesome. I just want to, before I let you go, I just want you to give a quick shout out to your, tell our people here on Turtle Island what about your nonprofit solar company.
Oh, yes, yes. So I have a company called Solar Bear, and that is www.solarbear.earth. And then also my nonprofit is called Native Sun Community Power Development, and that is www.nativesun.org. And you can reach me there, robert@nativesun.org or robert@solarbear.org.
Well, thank you so much for stopping in and giving us this great update. And I'll be looking forward to talking to you more when the time comes. Peeny Gigi, Bob Blake from Red Lake, I always love saying that. And thank you so much for all you do for our families and our relatives.
Thank you.
Oh. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and we'll be right back after this short break.
Hi, this is Representative Charisse Davids from Kansas. I'm Ho-Chunk, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm Wikunjahade, which means distant thunder, and I know I bring that up a lot, but it's really important that I bring it up at this point of the show because my daga, my uncle here, our elder of our family, named me distant thunder, and I just want to always say I'm so grateful for such a great name. And Peeny Gigi, thank you so much for stopping in, Uncle Curtis.
Oh, Peeny Gigi Tushke. First off, before I introduce myself, I want to say Ho-Chunk. My name is Mashke Hanajinga. I walked on a white cloud, and my colonized taxpayer's name is Curtis West, and I represent the Eagle Clan from our nation. And I always got to say hello to my beautiful wife, Kim. I call her baby girl, and I got to give a shout-out to where it comes out of my check, and I'm just giving her a title, shout-out for her work that she's really enjoying, and Reza, results title, and why is that? So I'm paying for this ad, so anyway, but ha-ho. I want to say ha-ho to all our family. I want to say ha-ho to all our family and relatives and friends in Four Directions. We pray all is well, you know. We always got to say this, and it's kind of getting tiring, but we got to stay serious on this, you know. Mask up, social distance, wash your hands, you know. Even though they got a vaccine coming out there, you know, this is far from over. So, you know, be safe. That's what we ask for. And so anyway, my Chushke here express myself on a few things. And I'd like to do some birthdays, and he's going to help me out with some events. And some shout-outs. So I'm going to start off with some birthdays. And I'm going to start off with some birthdays. We do the young ones first and the elders after, you know. But it's vice versa. But we're going to start off with birthdays. And this is a good friend of ours that went to Red Schoolhouse and I played basketball with him. And he turned 60-something years old. And he kind of be in the elder range, too. But we want to give a shout-out to Mike Lee over there, you know. And another one we want to give a shout out birthday to is a sister of ours, and her name is Danielle DeLong. So I want to say happy birthday to Danielle. And we got this other brother down there from Oklahoma. He's living here in the Twin Cities now, but he worked at the Red Schoolhouse for a while too. So, but he's a Kiowa Indian, so we want to give a shout out to Mike Kula Senior. So I want to shout out there, and then. Like I said, the elders are very important to us. They're a library of knowledge and culture and everything. So look after them elders right now during this pandemic where they need something. Maybe got to go to the doctor. Maybe they got to go to get medication or food or water or anything like that. Look out after them. Check in on them. So we want to say happy birthday to these elders. I'm going to start off and with these elders and the one, he's my my favorite brother-in-law down in Tennessee. His name's Ken Ward. He turned 78 today, and I'm going to say happy birthday to Kenny. You know, he don't like me to brag about his age, but, yeah, he's in great shape, man. A lot better shape than I am in for an old dude. But once happy birthday to Kenny. And, these other elders that I really want to mention, too, they're really important to me. Clayton Winishek, Gregory Lone Tree, Charles Smith. I want to say happy birthday to Sybil Gray Owl, Levi Blackdeer, Lawrence Lemire, and we want to say happy birthday to them elders and many more blessed ones to you. And we're going to give some shout-outs out here, too, and my Tushke lets me do this. And I want to say have a happy and safe holidays. I hope you get what you need. And
I want to give a shout out to Paul Fox, our legislator, one of our legislators. You know, I really give him a peanut because, you know, he gives me scoops on what we need to do on the radio, and he answers my call immediately. So I want to say ho to that guy and Paul Fox, and he's listening. And he said he talked to Robert a few times, and the other shout out I want to say is I want to say peanut to my chushke here, Robert. Man, that was really a great area meeting, and they touched a lot of people outside of the metro area, you know, and all the way down to Arizona. And I really liked it for Robert. He runs a good meeting, and I appreciate that. And the other shout out I wanted to give out, and I know you guys who didn't tune into the area meeting, what do you call it? The Ho-Chunk Nation is in agreement with Pfizer Corporation or company, the medical, and about 5,000 doses of that vaccination, you know, and they're in agreement with them. And it's going to be no charge to tribal members right now. And they said that dose, you know, you'll get that dose, and we might have to go to Black River, but they're trying to work on a deal right now that they're going to bring it for D4 as close as Hudson, Wisconsin. But that dose is no charge to tribal members, and they're looking into for our non-tribal members, spouses, or you know, a family or children or whatever. Not, you know, they're looking into it. So they told me to, I got the word from them, so it's not fake news, and they said just stay tuned. And the tribal members are no charge, and it's going to be 5,000 doses. And got the dose, and then 21 days later, you'll get the second dose of it. So I wanted to mention that to you. And I got to give a shout out to Jerry Wabuz Augenash down there. He's down in Arizona right now, and he looks into, you know, like I said, he gives me scoops from the Red Lake Nation, and I know we got a lot of Red Lakers listening in to Robert Show here, and so I want to give a shout out to the Red Lake Nation, and I want to give a shout out to, I always got to do this, to American Indian Movement. I'm a proud member of AIM.
Oh.
I want to give a shout out to Clyde, Frank, and Lisa, you know, and I want to, like I said, man, much love out there to us AIM members. And other ones I want to give a shout out to, you know, is to my Chushke here, and this is D4. He's going for seat one in the legislature. You know, get that signature out there. I'm going to sign that paper today, and my brother Gary and my brother Mark are going to meet me over there, and we're going to put our X's on that paper.
Yeah, and, so thank you, Peenagigi, to everyone else who has signed. I really appreciate the support and the good words, and I appreciate all you're doing, Uncle Curtis.
Hey, Chushke, can you help me out with some events? Because I looked and I dug deep, and I need help today.
Hey, no problem. We're almost up time anyways, but we have a Rivers at Risk stop line 3 tomorrow at 2 p.m. on, if you live in St. Paul, it's the Marshall Bridge, and if you live in Minneapolis, it's the Lake Street Bridge. It's the same bridge, but that'll be at 2 p.m., and it'll be a rally for line 3 against line 3, of course. And then also we have our shows Tuesday at 2, and Wednesday at 5, Pilots Progressive Party. And then we're doing a big symposium this Sunday. All the people in Ramsey County and Native Americans and how they're affected by COVID. So that's a really exciting show. And I'm just totally excited and grateful for all you do, Uncle Curtis. And I love my nation.
Oh, hey. Wow, I'm going to do it quick here, Tuesday. D4 legislation, the sixth run in the run paperwork and signatures are due by January 9th, so get that in there. And another real quick special shout-out to Deb Holland, the Secretary of Interior, Native American from the Pueblo Nation. She went to Standing Rock in 2016 and cooked for all of us over there.
Oh, Peenagigi, thank you so much. Dega, do you have any wisdom to end
our
show?
He told me, don't be afraid to show your heart. It's not a sign of weakness, but a sign of strength. Let your spirit shine from your heart always.
Peenagigi, Uncle Curtis.
Oh.
I would like to end with these thoughts. If you are listening to the show, you are the resistance. From Chief Plenicoops, the ground on which we stand on is sacred ground. It is the blood of our ancestors. We need to resist, divest, join a group, run for office. You've been listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I've been your host, Robert Pilot. The revolution is kicking into high gear, and I would like to thank all my listening audience, our sponsors, and especially our guests, which make this show. If you are listening to this show, you are the resistance. We're still here. We are the seventh generation. Free Leonard Peltier.